Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women. We focus on the Latinx prisons in the comic book industry,
with a strong special focus on strong female characters and creators. The following is audio from the Latin Comics Expo on a panel that Kristen moderated by the name Latina Power. And it was a very beautiful, wonderful panel, but it was the first time I recorded audio at a live panel, so it was not very good audio. I did try to modify quite a bit of it, and hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I did being there. But again, I apologize in advance because the audio is not very good, and not everybody had the same pitch when they spoke into the microphone, so I'd like to extend a cordial apology, but I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did.
So thank you all for coming to Latina Power. I was so excited to be able to moderate this panel. My name is Kristen. I had a name for it, but my grandmother would yell and say, "Mama, your name is Mama." So my name today is Kristen Mama. So I am a part of the Comadres y Comics podcast that we have a table outside that you guys might have seen walking around. We are an all-female podcast that highlights the Latinx presence in the comic industry as creators, characters, and as a fan base. We review a different book every episode that highlights either a Latino, Latina creator or character, or that somehow highlights something like the culture in the book. I also am co-owner of Adio Comics, which is in Santa Monica, so any of you are local to the LA area, stop on by. We are in Santa Monica, and always love to see new faces over there. So we're going to go ahead and just get started with the panelists. I would like to just begin by letting them introduce themselves, and also just give us a brief description of how your entry into the comic book world and realm came about. So since you have the microphone, let's start with you.
Hi, my name is Nico Evans. I am based out of Chicago, and my hometown is actually Dallas, Texas. And I'm the creator of Scholar Comics. It started off with a web series that I recently put into print through Zine. And my comics mostly touch on adolescents around middle school age and stories of young girls, young Latina girls, undocumented girls, and the realities that they live and how that sort of shapes their feeling, shapes the way they interact in school with their family, etc.
I am Liz. I started reading comics from college. It was kind of a nice way of balancing a lot of the academic work that I was doing. But I quickly just kind of gravitated to the back a little bit and started practicing comic making by getting all the Zine tests and DIY art. I write a lot of autobiographical work. And also kind of dealing with adolescence, just kind of like dealing with a lot of culture and culture shock.
My name is Elena Chavarria. Sorry, I actually have been reading my hip hop comics, both their product and high school and fans. And I have some children's story ideas. But then I had also a series of unfortunate events that happened to some friends and family members, and I came up with the idea for the Magic Classes, which is the comic we just released in May. And I collaborated with a friend of mine who's been in the industry for a few more years, and that's how I got started. I never like planned it, it kind of just happened, but now I love it and want to do so much more with it, so I'm excited.
My name is Natasha Hernandez. I'm based out of San Antonio, Texas. My history with comics is a course being a learner to read because my mom bought me an Archie comic when I was 4, and I was obsessed with it, and I had to learn how to read to get into it, and I just continued being obsessed with comic books and got really into just like, you know, whatever, X-Men stuff, you know, Silver, kid stuff, and then I guess around maybe like high school age, I got like super into Love and Rockets, and that was super important to me to like see myself, feel represented, feel like it was a part of my identity, and like, well, so like punk rock shows, and making out with ladies and shows, cool stuff, super important. And then that kind of just like informed me to like want to like make more media that was representative for Latinas, not necessarily young Latinas, but just Latinas in general, so that they could feel represented and affirmed in their lives. And part of like where we're at with Inicia, which is a mission-based call of the feminist magazine.
My name is
Mark
Dillon. I'm based here in Hollywood.
How does your personal definition drive creativity
want to make what we need to develop, like the co-creator of Lucia do, is we want to make a platform for that. So we want to make a space where Latinas could feel represented. It's just me and her that publish everything and everything, distribute everything. And we want to make a space where it's only Latinas getting printed and getting published, because that doesn't really exist anymore. We want to make as much content as possible and as much physical books written and created by Latinas. And we also want to make a space where we can talk about a lot of things that weren't necessarily able to be covered before. So we kind of made our first issue really fun and sex positive, and then it was really driven by our submission, so we kind of opened it up to talk about everything. Like, it was a lot of reality at once that came in, so we just made space for everything. Like, there's a lot of feminist content, there's topics about, like, masturbation, abortion, queer issues, trans issues, immigration issues, like, just making a space to be honest about the struggles that we face and to kind of celebrate that we're overcoming this and being bad bitches is what we're going to do. Before we move on, actually, can I have you give a brief synopsis about where the idea for Speak to Sia came from? I read it online and I was like, oh my god, this is my patron saint.
Okay, so the name of the studio was actually came up with by Isabel, who is our art director and our editor, and she came up with it because like her and her homegirl in college used to be like, oh shit, like shit went down, like we need to ask for help on that time. And like they were like, you don't know what I mean. Like, oh, it was something else, but like something went down, and I don't really understand like modern women. So maybe she's got like saint, like kind of pulled up, like kind of like come up. Yeah, so like that's where the name Lucia came from. But to me, it's kind of like more representative of like the two sides of like media representation of Latinas. Like there's a dichotomy represented there, so it's you're either a saint or you're a Lucia. You're either like represented as an older lady wearing a rosary or a lady in a push-up bra trying to vacuum in the house of modern family. Like that's not real. And we're just trying to show you the spectrum and just seeing that dichotomy that exists.
Nice.
You touched on how, you know, the deficits really being our power, and that's really what the Magic Class is about. You know, it's about helping young women see that their deficits are their magic powers, and what are they going to do with that power? How are they going to use that power to help their community and help their friends, you know, to just make our society better. So we're looking forward to everything that's going to come out. But the magic power to me, I mean, is that using all of your stories, your upbringing. In our stories, there's a scene where our main character Heidi is fighting with her mom, and some of those fights like really happen between me and my mom. You know, like get your life together. You can't drive the car. You can't do this. So those things, they definitely show up in our writing for sure. And just like you, I mean, we want to make sure that there's so many stories that can be told about our community. And I'm just giving it one perspective, you're giving it another, and there's room for all those stories to happen. So just excited to see more Latina characters out there.
Strength and be strong for themselves.
and would always, the man in her life, wasn't my grandfather, but would always be like, give me some water, or give me some beer, or give me this, give me that, and I would watch her as a woman being, you know, growing up and being raised in the 80s and the 90s, and being, you know, strong, independent, you can't tell me what to do, and seeing that, and really just being so upset, but then also seeing how strong she was, she would see how she ran her own business, she was an entrepreneur, just having to have the strength to do all that, but keep the house together and keep this man, you know, quote unquote, happy, definitely, you know, like you're saying, is really bringing truth to me for my reality as well.
And a lot of what's already been said, but I think Latina power on a structural level is definitely like Latinas taking control of the means of production. like being a publisher, being the artist, even being like the convention and the expo organizer. So like, I was talking to Ricardo and his daughter Sofia earlier during the convention, and just talking to them, I could tell that it was like Sophia was probably been pushing for like more women to be at the convention, for more zine makers to be at the convention. And I could tell because Ricardo basically is like would admit it. while I understand that he's like one of the main organizers of it, like I can definitely see like his wife's influence and his daughter's influence on how the convention has been shaped and changed over the past years. So I definitely think like the power is like us being the ones putting it all together. And I also think that on like a more individual level, it's just encouraging other young women, young men to be the artists. Like that was real hard for me. Like art was beat out of me by like 13. Like, that was not a thing that you do. Like it doesn't make money. It's not gonna get your family the thing that they need to live, etc. I think I really kind of gave up on it in my like middle school, and I didn't even start my comics until like 2 years ago. I'm 29, so I started it at like 27. Like that's when I started drawing. I was never really into comics. My brother had a huge stash, but I just like didn't care because it was like mainstream comics. It was just like glued to your face all the time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't into it. But it wasn't until I got way older that I was just like, I don't know what I want. I want to make comics. that it's like really changed a lot of what I think that I'm even capable of. Like the idea of being able to start this webcomic was just like a fun thing. And then seeing so many people gravitate towards it, so many people relate to the story, I was like, oh, snap, I'm awesome. And it's super encouraging, right? Because a lot of the messages that I was getting were from other women, older women, younger women, and those words of encouragement mean the world. So I'm an after school teacher now, and one of my programs is to teach kids how to make comics, middle schoolers. So I always tell them how they just draw. anything. Like, they have a hard time creating characters because they never think it's good enough. They're watching SpongeBob, they're watching, Fosters and like Adventure Time. And they're just like, we love those comics. So I'm like, you know SpongeBob is a sponge, right? Like the idea came from a square, a yellow square. Like you can draw the yellow square. Just draw me something. And just consistently encouraging them that they can do it, they can create characters that could eventually be that SpongeBob. But it's just constantly encouraging each other that we can do the small things and we can do the larger things. Like it was really important to like getting out what Latina power is.
Absolutely. Thank you all for sharing your personal experiences with that. I think that what you said, Nico, resonated with me as far as all the positive feedback that you're getting. I'm sure that all of you here on the panel have been getting me as Comadres y Comadres to experience that at the East LA Comic-Con that happened back in May in East LA. And the thing that I walked away from that event knowing in my heart is that the Latino community is so ready for this, so ready for comics, and so ready to have books and media that reflect themselves not only in the way that the characters look and
in the stories that are being portrayed in these books. So thank you all here for doing that. I feel like I'm probably going to say that over and over again. So one of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this panel and Latina power is the fact that there has been a lot of talk about intersectionality within the feminism movement with regards to people of color, women of color, not feeling like that movement includes them. And so I was wondering, how do you see, if you see parallels to that within your creative endeavors, within the comic book industry, within the meme world, within that space of however you get out your media, are there parallels? And like, what has been your experience? And how do we, as women of color, as Latinas, really try to make sure that Latina power and women power, like, what's the word looking for? Like, how do we reconcile that?
Big question.
I think that we just always, so as much as we encourage Latina power, et cetera, like, we always have to look at, you know, the margins of the margins, like whether we're in them or not. So like, for example, I exist as like a Latina, right? That affords like a certain amount of privilege, right? Nobody really questions about that, blah, 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 blah. I'm taping with my friend who's Afro-Rica, identified as Black or Indigenous, like, that's definitely something that we see as like a margin, like an identity that isn't always recognized in the Latina community. I mean, for example, like we don't have Afro Latinos on the panel, right? But this is a panel on Latino power. I think yesterday there was like the first panel on queer comic cards, I believe. I missed it, but yeah, and that was the first time in the 7th year of the expo. So like, there's definitely movement towards it. But I think in order to keep it moving faster, to just always look outside of whatever it is that we exist in. Like, definitely tell your story, but definitely keep everybody else in mind. Because we're all there. You know, there's other Afro-Indigenous, Afro-Latinos out there making comments. We just have to make sure to look at them. And not just look at them, but let them be open. Like, let them come in. Run their own shit, however it is that they want to do it, because they're going to come up with different ideas. I remember somebody made a comment, it was like a dude made a comment about, I don't remember who it was, but I heard it at some point that, you know, there's all these like comic artists writing about their emotions and beings. And I'm like, this? And we got a lot of them. And these are accessible to us. You know, if they're accessible to us, we're going to use it. And if that's the medium that we want to use, that's the medium that we're going to use. You know, or maybe our books aren't going to be found, and like, maybe they're not going to go through a publisher, but that's what we want to do. And it's going to be a new thing that we can use to, you know, take it or leave it. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see it playing in like, the Latino comic book.
I usually struggle with, like, being aware of humility and honoring humility with trying to push yourself out there, especially in America. And go spell all of your promotions and try to get people's services. But in thinking about intersectionality and art and all that, I think that I balance it out by saying, I'm really limited in my perspective, but I'm really aware of how limited I am in that perspective, and I'm going to try to push through that. That's what humility takes in. And on the other hand, it's like when looking at people as people said, it's recognizing that, you know, being a good listener and trying really hard to become a better listener over time, because that's how you recognize or you come to see other people's stories, and you're able to not put yourself in a bubble and only speak about people who have the same experience as you. You know, on the other hand, it's also like, well, if I'm able to bring in these perspectives, even if I have a limited point of view, I want to be able to create work that feels universal, so that way I can start a conversation with people who are different from me. And, you know, in terms of feminism and intersectionality and, you know, space for comic books, it's being able to honor like the variety in the which people were able to take a theory or an idea and then adapt it from that. And that there's not one way to do it. There's the right way to do it. And just kind of honoring everybody else for like the way that they incorporated it into who they are. So, yes.
I think something that was touched on about being a good listener, you know, and getting to know other people's stories. I always say to people, like, I've never walked in your shoes. You know, I don't know about your story, but I'm sure I can relate somehow. Because I, you know, I have a background in psychology and counseling, actually, so I hear a lot of people's stories. And you start to see common themes, and there's a lot of people that just want to be heard. You know, so again, my stories, I write from my perspective, and I even, you know, mix some of the different stories I hear from people, but when I come across a story that I feel like, wow, and I get really, like, passionate about, like, this story needs to be told, I have to remind myself, like, I don't have to be the one that writes everybody's stories, because then I'm not going to continue so much. I have so many ideas, right, but I want to, like, try to stay focused, so I just try to be encouraging about, like, your story does need to be told, and you're the only one that can tell. You know, so go for it. I think that's the biggest obstacle for me is just, like, taking that risk. I mean, she started at 27, I'm 36. I think, whoa, I think it's never too early or too late. And, you know, we just have to, once we figure out how to get there, like, pull that door open and continue to be encouraging so that all of our stories are important.
I like that. That is a growth thing. That's awesome. So I definitely agree with what you were saying about letting people tell their own stories. And I think that that's something that's like super important that we try to do in the media that we print, is like allowing people to tell their own stories and express their own reality. And a lot of those realities are things that like people don't usually talk about. Like we're talking about like our Lebanon experience. Like, that's awesome and important, and you have these, like, thinking for Arizona, right? Afro-Latina Manifesto, which is amazing poetry. But then there's all these other intersections that exist within the Latina community. You know, there's, like, queer Latinas, there's, like, trans Latinas, there's all these different, like, ways to be a Latina. And all those voices need to be told in their own words versus, like, saying, like, hey, we're speaking for all Latinas here right now, or we have the authority of this. Like, definitely it needs to be people telling their own stories in their own words. But getting to larger intersectionality where it comes to like, I guess like the question is kind of like about the difference between like white feminism and like Latina feminism and like how we're using media to like cross those lines and move beyond that. I kind of feel like it's kind of like, I think I'm talking right crowd for like X-Men, thinking about like, yeah, I'm telling the right crowd. So what is X versus where you're like, do you want to be accepted as part of the community, or do you want to exist separately and, you know, really embrace your powers? So I'm kind of like on the Magneto camp right here, where we're just kind of like, do you need to argue about what feminism is to white women, and can we please be invited to your party? We need to be like, no, we're mutants, and we have superpowers, and we exist, and to our stories, and they exist, and they're amazing, and we're poets, and we're artists, and here it is taken. So we just need to make our own media and make our own spaces and not wait for people to invite us into galleries. Not wait for people to invite us to be published. Not wait for people to say like, oh, can we publish your book? No, too late. I already published my book. You want a copy? Done. Like, that's what it is. Like, all the organizing that we do in San Antonio is with other leaders that are like women of color, and we're just like organizing together. And we don't worry about like what women in New York are doing, wearing hats that look like hat faces or whatever it was, you know? We're not worried about what white feminism is doing. We're worried about ourselves. We're worried about organizing our community. We're worried about empowerment. We're worried about mobilizing. We want to do that, and once we do that, it's going to prove to people that Latina feminism is important. We exist. We're here. Our stories are here. And that's that. We exist outside of that, and eventually the greater mainstream media is going to have to accept it because it's going to be there and it's going to be organized.
Thank you. I totally agree with Natasha in that I feel like sometimes the discussion with the mass media, there is this launch whenever we have a new character
that's why that's exactly why we need more story representatives. I mean, there are so many male or white male characters and stories out there, but we need more of women, of different kinds of women, of different ethnicities, genders, and then the whole spectrum of genders, the whole spectrum of ethnicities. We need more of everything so that they can look
So, I don't remember what it was specifically who highlighted the sexy gap humor. but you touched upon stereotypes. In Latino storytelling, a lot of times that defaults to stereotypes. Because a lot of times our stories are being told by non-Latinx people. So, how are you women combating stereotypes in your
our creator is Latino, and he was pretty much facing the day because of his ethnicity and how disappointed he wanted them, and they loved superheroes, but he didn't love superheroes like that, as he was saying, under the mask and after him. So he really created the story and worked throughout the entire writing process to ensure that his heritage was represented in not only the dialogue, but how the characters look. So there's a Latino family, and they do not necessarily have a traditional story, a very traditional story. It's very much that he wanted the family to be represented, he wanted a multitude of characters to be represented, but we made sure that as a creator that he's infused through every aspect of the process to ensure that genuineness of the authors is going to use storytelling and make her
So I feel like when you publish Latino media, the biggest stereotype that you have to combat is like the super sexy Latino stereotype. I think that that's like the main thing that's everywhere. And I think that like for me personally, it was kind of like a moment where I had to have a talk with myself. I'd be like, hey Tosh, what's going on? If you're publishing a sex positive magazine where a bunch of Latinas are talking about their sexuality, are you contributing to the hypersexualization of Latinas? And I really had to like talk to myself, I'm like, what about this? What about this? And I came to the answer, fuck no. And it's because we are telling our own stories in our own words, and there are our own experiences. And it's really important that communities have the ability to talk about themselves in honest ways. And it's not fair that we have to feel like we're going to be judged, or like we're contributing to a cliche, or we're contributing to stereotypes, just because we want to talk about something that's natural and human. And in all of us, and like taking away Latina sexuality from narratives and from media that's being told by us in our own words is counterproductive, because that's giving more power to the idea that other people get to tell the stories of our sexuality. Other people are in charge of what it looks like for us to be like sexual humans. So what we're trying to do like with the theme is like allow women to connect, feel affirmed in their experiences of like, you know, queer love or masturbation or whatever their experience is. But it really does go beyond that with like all of the narratives that we're doing in the scene. It's like talking about just everybody allowing all Latinas from like different walks of life to talk about their specific experiences. So that's how we're combating stereotypes, is by showing like all the in-betweens of the assumptions of Latinas. So the assumptions that are there are really, like I said, like, you know, in a movie, you're usually the main, like, Lupita Vives was like an actress for like 30 years, and she was the main, I think, 52 times, right, if you and then Sofia Vergara, like, she never is not wearing a tank top and a push-up bra. Like, those are the representations we have available right now. And what we're trying to do with, like, publishing, like, real stories from Latinas is showing that there's so much in between those two, you know, really different perspectives that are shown, that are not even written by us.
Just like there's diversity in color, and there's diversity in personality. And there's people that are going to be fine with that kind of material, people that are natural conscious with that kind of material, that's what everybody's choice is. For me, when it comes to stereotypes that showed up in our work, I actually am collaborating with an artist who is Filipino American, and even as a woman of color, and even though our cultures are very similar, there are some things, because she's been exposed to mainstream media, that she just
film when she's drawing characters. I have to say, wait a second, let me take a look at that, because in our first story, she was drawing the mom originally wearing an apron, very domesticated. You know, I'm a mom, I don't wear an apron. But I said, you know what, I really want to represent her mom to be more of a businesswoman. And she's a single mom, but she's going to be a single mom that's a businesswoman. You know, my mom was actually a housekeeper. My dad wasn't a gardener. You know, he's done very well for himself, actually. So even in my two parents, I've had a very variety of different career paths that they took that go against what we commonly see in the media, and I wanted her to be able to show that through the artwork that we do. But she definitely was open to that feedback. I'm not even conscious that she had done that, and so we changed the look of the mom. And she also like partnered with me and said, let's talk about like the background, the scenery of the book. I live in Watts. And I said, you know, I really want to send some pictures, but I want her to be authentically like I'm growing up here in South Central. So I sent her some pictures, and she's even been to my house and the community so that she can see what it looks like. So when she drew those images, she had authentic representation of like, you know, sometimes there's some homelessness you drive by in the community, but then there's other shops of like really nice areas of our community too. So again, trying to fight those stereotypes that what is bad place, or you know, that it's just a place where poor people live or something like that, but or violence or things like that. There's actually real people living there, or we're building a real community. And I think she did a really nice job representing that.
Please tell me there's a middle somewhere in the background.
There is a picture. But you know what, actually,
my friends are in the audience.
I don't think I've seen a middle, a lot of middle in our community,
unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to make that happen.
My parents are from a small town, and there's a lot of, I feel a lot of pressure to sort of provide by a lot of rules, and I think that a lot of those rules and traditions in some ways reinforce stereotypes. But in one of my last visits to my parents in town, I realized that there was a queer community in the small town, and that a lot of my cousins, or a handful of my cousins, are queer and have embraced their queer identity within this very traditional sort of world. And to me, that just told me, like, even when you try to revive by things that seem more traditional or stereotypical, there's always, like, little fibers of, oh, you don't fit into that. No one can possibly fit into that because everybody's completely different. And even if you have a sexy Latina, that sexy Latina is not going to act in a way that you feel is going to be stereotypical. She's an individual. And it was really eye-opening for me to see how much variety of personality existed and how they compromised different things here and there. But I think that one of the things that kind of stumps me or makes me think about how to break the stereotypes is if people in this small town, or all the people that exist there, have the freedom to see themselves 100%, what would that look like? And even if that's not the reality thing, to be able to create a world where you can like just touch upon that individuality and see how it's different from, you know, the world that in some ways limits them, then there's potential for moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Liz said, like, there's always fragments of like your life or whatever it is that you're trying to portray in the comic that isn't stereotyped. Because I kind of grew up in stereotypical, like, Mexican family. My mom was a housekeeper, my dad worked in construction. They came here in documents, born in Quinn, Texas, in a big family, worshiping Catholic Church. Like, check, check, check. So there was a minute where I was like, dang, but there's always something that doesn't quite fit that mold, right? A little dorky Latina girl who like was growing up in the hood, but like liked school, like reading, and like really nerdy things in general, that doesn't quite fit the mold, right? A mother who, although she grew up in the Catholic Church, church got to the point where she started rebelling against it. For various reasons, for the way that they were treating her daughters. And there's always like little aspects of that I try to bring out in my comics from the perspective, from like my perspective of when I was 12. So like watching novellas are pretty stereotypical, and you just kind of like rolling my eyes and like, why is it always the same poor woman falling in love with that same rich dude? And just little things like that can also even shake up like maybe even internalize stereotypes that we have within our own community. So it's not just from the outside in, it's just like us sometimes, like the things that we start to believe about ourselves. Whether you notice it or not, sometimes you do start to kind of believe that you should be a sexy Latina or whatever it might be, and just starting to tear into that. I created a comic recently called Rosita Gets Scared that's about scholar's friend Rosita who's undocumented. And the whole comic is about her witnessing the deportation. She's undocumented, living here with her mother. And I got a lot of press, and I had a lot of people interviewing me about it. And I realized real quick that I needed to like not turn this into some soft story, because that's exactly what the interviewers were trying to get at me. Right? Like, I guess, but she's also like giving advice on like how to navigate this reality. Like she's giving advice as if she were an adult. Like, we get to the fact that she's really mature. And people were talking about like, oh, she's living with a single mom. How is that? I was like anybody else who lives with a single mom? I don't know. I'm not talking about that. Like, I'm talking about her perspective as a young undocumented girl. So I had to be very careful to not like play up this like young mom minority living here undocumented cry for her. Like no. Like the whole point of this book is for her to be able to relate to other undocumented young people so that they can have a space to speak about their fear, so that they can eventually fight the system. Send them a message. It's empowerment. Not for you to necessarily cry out. So I like definitely have to like deal with that on like, a larger scale. You have to be pretty careful because people will try to box you in sometimes.
So thank you, ladies, for definitely sharing all your expertise and all of your stories. I have tons more questions for you, but we're at the time right now where I want to give it over to the audience. If there's any questions that you might want to ask the panel as a whole or an individual panelist up here, we got the your time is almost up sign from the guy in the back, so we do have limited time. But if there are any questions, definitely.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for being here and sharing all your experiences. Right now, there's this, all this media spotlight and all this outing or putting the spotlight on all this, these bad producers who are objectifying women and sexualizing women and raping women. It's all coming to light right now, and that's in the Hollywood arena. I was wondering, in your arena, in the arena of comics and zines, is that a prevalent thing too? Is it something that's prevalent in all across the media landscape, or just particularly TV and film? Does that happen to be in the print arena as well?
I'm constantly having conversations with other women about how when we go to an event and table and try to represent ourselves as professionals, there's always this layer of people, specifically men, coming up to our table and kind of implying that it's a potential for a sexual encounter. And that happens so often. And it's really soul crushing because here we are working our asses off to be good at something and to like empower ourselves and our voice. And here we think, okay, this amazing artwork all around me. I worked really hard to get here. And the first thing that's brought to my attention is when sometimes a man comes up is my sexuality. So it's something that's just so common that I think to a certain point you just expect it. And if anything, having the experience of coming to the forefront means that, well, obviously this is coming up and some people are actually admitting it. So perhaps now when we speak about it, those people will be listening, people other than women will be listening. And maybe now there is potential to shift that culture.
know, I mean, just like she said, I don't think it takes anything as extreme as what we're seeing in the media, you know? Somebody jerking off in front of you or anything like that, but I think just what this is saying is, like, you want to be respected for our work, you know? And I actually said to someone, I said, you want to compliment me, don't compliment my looks, compliment my work, or give me criticism, or give me feedback, but I'm not sure to engage with you on that level. And she said, like, that's the first thing, you know, we're coming out here trying to be serious about our business and be business women and be business minded. We want to be respected as though. So even though it may not be something very forward like that, I mean, just those subtle comments sometimes make you feel like you're even taking it seriously. I'm not just a cute girl in glasses, you know, but thanks, you know, I really want to do this for a living and, I'm going to be your competition, not your date, you know?
We did have an issue like that a while back in the art community, the psychology community in San Antonio. So it raised a lot of questions about, like, you know, consent, call-out culture, how you do things like, how you deal with things like this when it's a member of your community. We had a conversation about, like, it was me and Lisa from St. Sophia and a local gallery owner, and we had a conversation about, like, okay, restorative justice versus, like, ousting from the community, like, what's more important, like, what are priorities here? And we came to the conclusion in that situation that the priority was to build a community where women can say that something has happened to them, and we don't question it. We made a public statement, like, we're pulling out of this guy's shop. His store closed the next day after he was accused. We honestly heard about what happened. We don't know because we weren't there, and it was somebody that was, like, really close friends with Issa, so she was, like, devastated. She was crying. We were on the front porch, and Issa was crying, like, I can't believe you pulled this, and I'm like, well, what do we do? Do you want to have a community meeting? And then Kayla, who's the gallery owner, was like, you know what, we need an owl. So we just have a huge conversation about, like, what is the answer when this stuff comes up in, like, DIY communities and, like, punk shows or safe spaces or art galleries. When we're trying to do it all on our own, it's not like we can go to the police and be like, hey, this person is bothering me. It's like, no, we have a gallery space, or we're having a show at our home, or we're, you know, renting a bar space. We're responsible for the space, we're responsible for the people we're inviting, we're responsible for the community that's involved. So what we came up with was, like, no, we need to just say publicly, like, we're not going to question whether or not this woman is telling the truth. We're going to build a community where it's like, if somebody comes forward and they're believed, we don't want it to be like, you know, oh, we're women, but what was she doing? Was she really high when that happened? Because I know that girl, like, we're not doing anything. So, yeah, we just decided we're pulling out other female artists who put out a shop with people the next day.
Capable of private friends, like, you cannot wait or tell yourself, I don't know if my work is good. send messages, send us an email. We're going to find the people that you feel very connected with. You know, I think one of the things that the co-creator of my comic and I were very into grassroots, like get involved in the community. You feel like if you build the community, like they're going to support you. And we're getting out there and talking to people that are close to us. So even in your neighborhood, like you can already find people that you're connected with, build those relationships. The relationships are important. There's one thing I'm finding about, as I've been in business for a couple of years, like that we do business differently, and maybe just think of ourselves, I don't know, that's but I think, for women, I think we think more about that community and building that community around us, more about, like, I don't want to win by myself, I want to bring everyone with me. So for me, my community is right there. You know, I found them and they've been super supportive, so you're going to find this.
I just want to also talk from a retailer perspective. There is a community of female comic shop owners and employees that exist. It's called the Valkyries. I'm a member, and if I am family here, if you come and get my contact information, I will list all of the female safe shops in your area.
Kind of going on the ATS community. I'm with Maya in Oakland. Maya is sitting back. She also lives in Oakland.
So I'm
with and we found a really great community of people there. I think that the important thing to recognize is that, like, for me, I have a lot of, like, internalized fear and internalized self-doubt, and that's the thing that I think is something my most, I think, intentionally. And to my friends constantly pulling me out of that. The important thing to remember besides that community kind of help me push through those moments is that you're the only person who can tell your story. So this whole thing about going to events like this and seeing my feedback or my comic book artists is like you see everybody else at work and you're like, whoa, there's so much diversity here. Like everyone's work is so different. Your work is equally different. And equally special. So remembering that and then getting in touch with people who are going to remind you of that when you forget it is going to be key.
Yeah, similar story. I got my comments of crying when I first created them. I was just like my middle school. I was like, this ain't good. Like erasing everything. And I had a friend who was real pushy. She's a huge comic nerd. She's like, no, you need to do it. You need to do it. You need to do it. She literally brought her giant scanner to my house and everything. She helped me put it on the website, and I'm like forever indebted to her. But yeah, it's like I still have a lot of self-doubt when it comes to like how good my comics are, whatever, because I don't know if I Marvel or DC or whatever. Like I still don't know how to color on Photoshop very well. I still got little dots on the page, but screw it, you were buying it, right? And I love it. I'm happy with it, and they're happy with it, and then we're all happy. And yeah, it's been like really close friends who have really just like pushed me to keep it going, and the registry that I mentioned earlier.
So we are out of time. I know that there is so much more to talk about with this amazing group of women. Thank you guys all for coming. Thank you all. If there's anything more that you didn't want to talk to her about, most of them are all sailing. Liz, I'm sure, is going to just be wandering around. You can come up to her. I make Comic has a table out here. But please do reach out to us.